catch the Fraggin' Unicorn show on Friday? Nah, I caught them in Seattle a few months ago. I was in town. Coincided with a run I was doing. I know. I said I was retired, but some things need to be done. What were you doing that you couldn't make the show? I know you're a fan. You had a run that night? Convenient for you. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, broadcasting as a proud member of the Shadowcasters Network, I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. Bit of housekeeping first. I'm back from the Origins Shadowrunner Convention, and it was swell. There were a few too many Scots there, by which I mean I had a good time. I learned that Scotch whiskey is particularly amenable to being used as reagents, but I refuse to do so, nor will I allow it to be done in my presence. Such a waste. I will be attending the Indianapolis Shadowrunner Convention on August 4th through 7th coming up, so if any of you crows want to chat or swap stories, track me down. I'll have stuff to give away, and I'm still looking for a bit of karaoke. Alright, back to the podcast. But first, a few questions from our listeners in our Dear Opti segment. Dear Opti, theoretically, if the government wasn't corrupt and there were no megacorps or no corpse at all, would you still be an anarchist? From Fluffy. Oh, great question, Fluffy. I suppose the answer is yes. I mean, those of us who take anarchism seriously as a philosophy don't advocate for no rules or even no government or corporations. We advocate for no rulers, specifically no control or coercion by others. So if a government or a set of rules or a corporate body could exist without impinging on the health or free will of others, there's no problem. But as long as these social contracts are not freely entered into and are coercive or hurtful, then they need to go. This next one comes from Jason. Dear Opti, Raven Shaman, but you call everyone Little Crows. Why is this? Are you a Raven or a Crow Shaman? Well, Jason, I have a good answer for that. And this gets to some of the deep end of the pool discussions that we'll probably have to wait for another time, but I will say this. I label myself, for various reasons, as a Raven Shaman. As for my totem, that's a bit trickier. I would still technically say Raven, but that could be misleading. You see, the crow family of birds is not particularly monolithic. The genus Corvus, from the Latin meaning raven or crow, contains ravens, crows, jackdaws, and magpies. Even now, there's no universal distinction between ravens and crows. The language seems to differ regionally, especially across oceanic borders. Further, the distinction between a raven and a crow in the ancient world, as evidenced by our Latin example above, was non-existent. While in various cultures they were viewed somewhat differently, wisdom, messages, and some connection to death surrounded them all. So, having said all that, the tradition I follow, and the ultimate heart of my totem, leads me to the ancient path of Raven, stealing from death, gathering wisdom, and speaking messages. That is the old way, and whether I follow Raven proper or Old Crow as a term of endearment, they are very much the same thing in the most ancient, most radically inclusive understanding. I hope that helps, little magpie. Dear Opti, I have to ask, are you a BART train operator in the Bay Area? I was on a train and the operator sounded just like you. From Miller. I get this question a lot, and the answer is, I don't think so. But who knows where I go in my sleep. Keep those questions coming. You can get them to me on the Face Matrix or shoot them to me in a message at opti@neoanarchist.com. And I will make all of your wildest dreams come true by answering them. And now, back to the unraveling of future past as we engage 2068's greatest hits. First, as always, the geopolitical landscape of 2068. In Kenya, on January 24th, the nation erupted into riots after the World Cup team from Asamando tries to get themselves admitted. This was the African Cup of Nations 100-year anniversary, so there was an overflow of people in attendance. Needless to say, the entire Asamando African Cup team, along with their coaches, are killed in the violence. Later that year in Kenya, Richard Wangai is elected president for the next 6 years. On March 4th in Falkwamont in the SOX, nuclear reactor in the ESUS Arcology melts down, costing many lives and trillions in damages. On November 6th, General Angela Colliton was elected president of the UCAS. Perhaps you crows remember the general from when she led the UCAS through the attempted coup in 2064, as well as helping to end the shutdown of the Renraku Arcology. At that same time, Aaron Franklin is re-elected president of the CAS. Interestingly enough, he had a profound impact on the cast in ways that no one really predicted when he was elected. He was rather popular among conservatives, but around the second election began to extend his hand across the aisle. I'll tell you, no one was more surprised than me when I watched him give this speech, apologizing to African Americans, Native tribes, and even orcs and trolls for how the cast and his forebears had treated them. Even his own party was taken aback, and yet, this new tone was overwhelmingly approved by the common people in the cast. The politicians took notice. Writing a new mantra of Southern hospitality, Franklin really changed the culture and trajectory of the cast. Or, probably more accurately, they finally had a president who reflected their values instead of dividing them into different corners. In mid-2068, the ruined city of Ubar is rediscovered in Southern Arabia by the APEP Consortium. Ubar was once called the Atlantis of the Sands because it sat on a major caravan line for frankincense but then just disappeared. City was discovered fully intact, and the Bedouin tribes that led the APEP consortium to the city continue to camp outside of it, year-round. It offers an oasis, and many of my sources tell me that during the full moon, some sort of astral vision descends upon the city, appearing as it was long ago with palm and date trees. APEP, along with Dhofar province, have invested quite handsomely in excavating and preserving the ruins. In late 2068, the Queen of Shanxi, Michelle Chow, survived an assassination attempt perpetrated against her by Prime Minister Dashir Fazir. Legally, Queen Chow has very little power, but she had proven herself quite formidable in working with Parliament to further her agenda. Following the failed attempt on her life, Prime Minister Fazir is executed for treason, and those who supported him were arrested, or worse. Battles between various megacorporations in Argentina began in 2068 when the Arojo regime fell apart. Since, the megas have spent a tremendous amount to place their own reps in government positions in order to take advantage of the power vacuum. In California, in the winter of 2068, Ares helped California retake the San Francisco Bay Area from Japan's rogue General Saito. There are still, even today, factions loyal to Saito, but CalFree is back in full control of its territory once again. In Lagos, the Seven King War comes to an end when Oni Adegoke enlists Global Sandstorm for help. Global Sandstorm sends in military forces and makes short work of Oni Adegoke's enemies. For the uninitiated, Oni is the Yoruba word for king, and now Adegoke rules Lagos solo. Global Sandstorm just gets access to all that fancy oil running through the pipeline that connects the Niger Delta oil fields with Lagos. In Japan, Yohei Ida, the Speaker of the House, was thrown in jail for his ties to illegal whaling. All throughout 2068, Azatlan was becoming increasingly convinced that trying to enlist the aid of the UN in their war against Amazonia was a dead end. As a result, Azatlan started turning to its own devices to end the hostilities. Azatlan soon realized it was not going to be an easy feat, as leftist radical groups had set up shop in Bogota and were actively targeting anyone with Azatlaner ties within Bogota. Some of those same groups overran Bogota's airport, leaving Azatlan to split their forces between the violence in the street and reclaiming the economic hub. A bit further north, in the Yucatan, an eco-resistance group calling itself Gaia's Forsaken overtook a toxic site from Yucatan soldiers and began to cleanse the area. They succeeded more in cleaning up that area after 7 days than the Dragon Pobre's government had done in 4 years. The Forsaken executed anyone that they found to be a toxic shaman and let anyone go who was not. Since then, they have cleansed over 25 toxic sites in the Yucatan, and Pobre has spoken against them, saying that cleaning up toxic sites should be done properly by the government, not by radicals. Although Pobre has issued warrants for the arrest of Gaia's Forsaken, since then, not one has been claimed. The people clearly stand with those who are cleaning things up. Also, if you ask me, Pobre is protesting too much. Makes me wonder why on earth an adult dragon would not want his home turf to be cleansed of toxic magical stain. The only reason I can come up with is terrible to comprehend, but if there is a toxic dragon running around, I'd keep my kids indoors, amigos. And finally, the corporate court passed the Space Operations Charter in 2068, making space travel highly regulated and not nearly as fun as it used to be. Speaking of no fun, let's check in with the corporate happenings of 2068. In January, the Wind River Corporation, based out of the Sioux Nation, goes up for sale. Pueblo Corporate Court makes an offer, as does Shiwase and as Technology, but they are all outbid by Horizon. That is, they didn't offer as much money, but Horizon did agree to donate 10% of all agriculture back to food banks within the Native American nations. It seems someone at the negotiating table still had a soul. Whether or not that's true, Horizon opened up 5 hydroponic farms in North America, covering over 20,000 kilometers each, all with huge underground operations. These farms had been delayed for years, but with the purchase of Wind River and the opening of the farms, Horizon became the largest agricultural grower in North America. Keeping with the Horizon theme news, Virtual World Disney is purchased by Horizon in 2068, which makes Horizon the largest corporation in the Los Angeles sprawl. I'm sure that some of you are already more familiar with this next bit than I am, and I'm not exactly sure how I feel about it, but in 2068, Ares unveiled a new product called Firefight. It's not a traditional product, but it fits with Ares' God of War persona. Firefight is a new martial arts form developed by Ares in which the martial artists wield pistols in each hand while weaving in and out of melee. Of course, for all of us who grew up watching action trids, this seems edgy and cool. But keep in mind that Ares has sunk a lot of R&D into this, and their Firewatch teams are trained in it now as well, which means its effectiveness is just as great as its appeal. Ares tried for a bit to keep this in-house, but a few well-placed shadow runs have leaked the vital techniques and stances out into the black market, if you can find a willing teacher. Over at Shiawase, Nigel Coltrane, the man who replaced Ichiro Kiyomoto as head of the Marketing Information and Forecasting Department, or MFID, forced Kiyomoto to retire. Don't forget, kiddies, the MFID might seem like a rather banal group, but they are the corporate espionage division of Shiawase and nothing to be treated lightly. The slate was being cleared at Shiawase for something. Shiawase also found itself entangled in a struggle with Wu Xing in 2068, but it didn't stop there. It is rather boring, but at the bottom line is that Wu Xing didn't want Shiawase trying to claim a bunch of mineral rights to a piece of ocean off the coast of China, especially since the mineral in question was Manganese 56, of which there was a lot. Wu Xing fought this vigorously, leading to poor relations between Shiawase and Wu Xing since. Frankfurt Bank Association continued its post-crash 2.0 rise by acquiring Concord Banco Español in 2068, making the FBA even more powerful than Hildebrandt Kleinfort Bernal. After 20 years of continuous production, Lear Cessna decided to stop production of its personal luxury aircraft, the Lear Cessna Platinum One. As Technology, having recently renegotiated terms with Shibata, took over sole control of the Spindle space program. They didn't waste much time in evicting its last tenant, Universal Omnitech, in 2068. Of course, things have not been sunshine and roses between UO and the Aziz since Thomas Roxborough broke off relations with Aztechnology in the late 50s and early 60s. Since then, Azatlan and Aztechnology have responded in kind to UO whenever possible. Lastly, Sauter Krupp gobbled up Volkswagen in 2068. Aside from a rough run in the second decade of the century, Volkswagen had been pretty solid. Alas. Sliding into the tech news, July 2nd sees the corporate court approving virtual marriages as legal. Notice something about this, Crows. The corporate court decided. Not nations or individual corps, the CC, a global organization that has its HQ in space with no accountability or oversight, is now the arbiter of social issues around the planet. Whether or not you agree with the CC's decision, that should be troubling to you. And it only gets worse. Worse because most nations immediately follow suit. You can interpret that however you want. In otherworldly news, remember when I talked about Yamatetsu planning to send a mission to Mars by 2063? Well, even though Yamatetsu became Evo, and even though Crash 2.0 threw a wrench in the timing, they didn't give up. In 2065, Evo put some folks up there. Cosmonauts from Roscosmos on board the spaceship, the Valentina Tereshnikova, became the first people to set foot on Martian soil. While there, they surveyed the spot for the future Gagarin Mars base, among other things, but were all killed when a Martian storm caused their deaths. You know who did survive? Anatoly Kirilenko, the helmsman of the Valentina Tereshnikova. Not only that, but it disappeared from tracking and communication for 6 days on the way home, only re-establishing contact when it got close to the moon. And you know where that helmsman, Anatoly Kirilenko, is now? He's the CEO of Evo! Just let that wash over you like cosmic rays. No one but Kirilenko survived. There's no footage of the crew's death. And Kirilenko is now in a hurry to go back and start mining the planet. How did he become CEO anyway? Oh, sure, there are plenty of mundane reasons, but my never-satisfied gut tells me that Kirilenko found something up there and it changed him. Keep an eye on this, Crows. Over the next 2 years, Evo sent unmanned missions to build the Gagarin base, and in 2068... A new team of metahumans was sent to the Gagarin Mars base, and it was declared operational. Since, Gagarin has expanded across the surface of Mars, but also underground, and getting any info has been challenging. Ares and Sutter Krupp have both made attempts at sneaking drones in, but they weren't able to find anything either. If any of you little crows comes across anything, I'm buying. I do have a few tidbits in light of more recent events, but those can wait until a future episode. And now, we'll dive into the underworld and see how the unlawful side was living in 2068. On September 9th, a new player in the Hong Kong Underground made its appearance. A group calling itself 9x9 attacked a corporate holding facility in Hong Kong. This group, 9x9, started as a grassroots rebellion against the Canton Confederation and other corporate oppression. 9x9 started as a neat group, geared up in Chinese symbolism and numerology, fighting against corporations and for democracy. After a while, it came out that they were getting bankrolled and used by various groups, all the way from gangs to the Hong Kong Bank. Well, there are still factions within 9x9 that are legit, but their rep took quite a bit of a hit. But, and this is important to me, despite being labeled as a terrorist group, their actions have been the cause of very few deaths. No one's perfect, but that is saying something. For something closer to home, King Vlad, leader of the Chicago gang called the Horde, died in 2068 after fighting true Chicagoans over a few highways in Horde territory. A Horde orc called Alexis took over leadership through combat and moved the Horde base of operations to the old Govinda Enterprises golf course. Over in the Caribbean League, a relatively minor gang in Jamaica called the House of Jah stepped up into the big time when Steppen Razor Aaron Maldives busted hoop and sliced his way past all gang bosses to become their new leader, straight out of Kingston. All the tempo came flowing through Jamaica was funneled through the House of Jah, right into Atlanta and the rest of the cast. Pirates, called the Gingerbread Gang, helped get tempo from further south and grew in power exponentially almost overnight. Increasingly, the House of Jah became less a neighborhood gang with spiritual overtones and more of a military group, recruiting ever younger boys into conscripted service. And now for the magical happenings of 2068. On May 18th, an astral shallow developed in Hong Kong, portraying an astral vision of an eastern dragon onto the skyway called the Splendid Dragon Path. A shrine is built to commemorate the event on the location of the dragon's head. Yakuza Obayan Akira Watada of the Watada Rango branch of the Yakuza decided to die in 2068, leaving his nephew Hitori Hanzo to finally, officially, become the Oyaban. On Halloween of 2068, the APEP Consortium ran afoul of a group that started to bug them. Apparently, while excavating various archaeological sites in Egypt, APEP's field operatives were attacked by a group of beetle mages, calling themselves the Hemnager. For unknown reasons, this marked a time of increased discovery in ancient ruins being uncovered in Egypt and the surrounding regions. The Hemnager were not the only groups to provide resistance to the APEP Consortium, the Draco Foundation, and the Atlantean Foundation, not to mention the Islamic Unity Movement, all in their search for artifacts. But the Hemnager was the most pernicious, and for my Nuyen, the most dangerous, and they are still at large, even today. In one final bit about magic, 2068 saw the last witnessed use of a magical technique known as grounding. Grounding was a technique in which mages channeled mana from the astral plane into a spell using a focus or another dual-natured being as a touchpoint, meaning a mage could toss a fireball at an enemy from the active focus that his mage buddy was wearing. In 2073, a paper on the decline of grounding, Dr. Ayordes Whiteman wrote in the Journal of Thaumaturgy that there were few leading theories as to why the practice is no longer observed. The first is that the veil between the material and astral realms was weak back then, perhaps artificially so during the Awakening, and weakened further by events such as the Great Ghost Dance. Now that, whether artificially or naturally, the veil is stronger, this may prevent such techniques from being used. Second theory posits that the astral realm itself is growing in power, and now mages are no longer able to simply overpower the manosphere with their will, as they once did. A third, perhaps less scientific theory, is that mages collectively decided that this technique was unfair, and decided not to use it anymore, which I ordain, as well as myself, find ludicrous. And for the bit that no one ever wants to talk about, but we must, dragons. Five dragons were seen over the Caucasus Mountains in 2068, appearing from nowhere. These appearing dragons apparently had some sort of connection with Dunkozon, who had died 10 years prior. Ryan Mercury, former Shadowrunner turned Draco Foundation drill sergeant and free Drake, I might add, really went a little nuts after Big D died. He used to be cool as frag, but after 2059, he was almost a different dude. Real harsh and distant. Anyway, he went back to Lake Louise, where Big D had all of his stuff, to meet with those five dragons and tell them what he knew about the death of Big D. I'd have loved to have been a fly on that wall, chummers, as I'm still not convinced that we know everything about what happened. However, I have heard a very interesting theory from a group of Shadowrunners I'm connected with that suggests something bizarre that I'm still trying to track down some hard evidence for. Trust me, if it bears out, I'll bring it to you, and if it's true, some of the biggest news ever, and it's horribly horrifying. At any rate, these dragons apparently owed some sort of fealty to Dunkelzahn before he died, though at the end of that conversation, the dragons weren't satisfied with Mercury's answers. They left Lake Louise in disharmony. Two dragons swore their allegiance to Ghostwalker moving forward, one to Mercury, and two flew away independent. The dragon who sided with Mercury is called Rainwalker. One of the independents was a dragon called Cloudbreaker. The others I can't say. Maybe one of you know. And in the section that you have all been waiting for, the year in culture. After the twin earthquakes in 2068 hit the California Free State, over 200 musicians gathered from all over the corporate world gathered to sing a virtual concert together to raise funds for Cal Free's earthquake relief. The group ensemble recorded an old tune, We Are the World, which was written last century and has been used over 20 times in various ways to raise relief money for hurting people. I can't tell a lie, Crows. I'm a sucker for musicians coming together like this, even if they are corpse slaves. Unity, not uniformity, chummers. Later in the year, Crime Time restarted his orxploitation synth-hop tour of Europe. Grim Aurora, with Andrea Frost, won MTCA's Best Pop Collaboration with Vocals Award in 2068 for Augmented Fantasy. House of Cards released their self-titled rock album, House of Cards. I like these guys. The band's frontman, Jack, is solid. They only seem to want to tour Cal Free in other West Coast venues. I prefer their 71 album, Gang Life, but this is a solid selection as well. I was a particular fan of the dwarf rocker Gimli's 2068 tour, where he used his guitar as an axe and fought robot drones on stage. And finale, when he climbed up on top of the speaker stacks and then backflipped onto one of the robots while slicing it in half with his axe, was fairly metal, if I do say so myself. And I do. Another Darien Cross Vampire Hunter novel was released, this one called Strangers on the Tide. The Cenozoic Park reboot trid hit, and one of my personal favorites, Stuffer Shack Days, the indie buddy comedy about the orc and the elf clerks working for the man, came out. That's just comedy gold. Speaking of comedy, there's nothing funny about you wasting an entirely good slot of time listening to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. In closing, I want to give a hearty hello to our newest Patreon supporters, which receive monthly offerings of Neo-Anarchist Street gear. Freshly included in this illustrious list of capable crowfunders is Brainbot, Tom Callahan, Eric L., Earl Stone IV, Anthony Popowski, J-Rex, Matthew Gilliland, Seven, Gavin, Zone Gypsy, Andy, and Christian Falls. Thank you all. Everything you need to set up and maintain a Neo-Anarchist cell in your area, which, at various levels, now includes stickers every month, patches, dice bags, fake IDs of all sorts, contact sheets for Opti and his crew, USB cred sticks, sweet Neo-Anarchist t-shirts, whiskey glasses, temporary tattoos, and an upcoming album full of Sixth World musical malarkey will all be delivered to your safe house as we march bravely on. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanimium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, the for-free, no-hidden-fee, Tweedledee, Spelling Bee, Skeleton Key, Golly G, Teehee, Bruce Lee, Return to Me, Wounded Knee, Gotta Pee, Lost to See, Shimsheree, Podcastee, Opti. Enjoy your freedom, and use it to go to a Fragging Unicorns concert. You won't regret it.